Up next, hour number two of The Dr. Future Show.
Welcome back, my friends, to the show that never ends. Ladies and gentlemen, KSCO presents The Dr. Future Show. If you would like to join in our show today, you can call us at 831-479-1080. That's 831-479-1080. And now, your host, Dr. Future. Why
do we never get... Okay, welcome back to the Dr. Future Show. In this hour, we're going to be speaking about a documentary being made, From Shock to Awe. It's a documentary about veterans and post-traumatic stress disorder and their journeys with ayahuasca, MDMA, and cannabis. According to the report from the Veteran Affairs Office, 22 vets take their own lives every day, and many of them have PTSD. And Shock to Awe is a feature-length doc that will look at the journey of military veterans as they seek the relief from PTSD, how this is done with ayahuasca, MDMA, and cannabis. So to look at that, we have several people involved with this documentary on the line. So,
hi, folks. You want to just introduce yourselves?
I don't have the full information on your names, so I'd love you to introduce yourselves.
Let's start with Ryan.
Okay.
Okay. Hi, guys. My name is Ryan LeCompte. I'm a former United States Marine. I served in the infantry on active duty from 2007 to 2011. And I'm also a full-time grad student here in Boulder, Colorado, going for my master's in transpersonal counseling psychology.
Nice.
All right. Next, let's hear from Janine. Hi, Janine.
Hi, this is Janine. This is Janine Sagard. I'm working on the movie. I have a PhD in culture and mental health, including altered states of consciousness, and helping produce this. As an Army brat, it's close to my heart.
Okay.
These veterans really deserve our help. It's time that we fight for them.
Okay. All right.
And then we also have our guest, Sajid. Saj, welcome.
Hello, everyone. Yeah, this is Saj Razvi, and I am a psychotherapist in Denver, Colorado, specializing in post-traumatic stress disorder. I am one of the sub-investigators and clinicians on the phase two clinical trial of MDMA for treatment-resistant PTSD, which is taking place in Boulder. We're about to wrap it up, actually.
Wow. So you have actually clinical trials with humans done already?
That's correct. We're nearing the end of all phase two clinical trials and prepping for phase three. The Boulder, Colorado trial is the largest one, but there's been a few in South Carolina with veterans and first responders. There's one in Canada, Israel, Sweden. So, we are well into human trials.
Wow. Would you characterize what's going on in terms of the change in the laws for psychedelic research along these lines? Is it like at the end of a prohibition of some sort?
Good question. Well, we are really relying on the science here. You know, obviously, it's a political hot potato in a sense to be working with Schedule I substances because they can be abused and used recreationally and that kind of thing. And so, in some ways, it is difficult to get. It's taken many, many years to get to this point of being able to test the efficacy and safety of these medications.
Right. They've been kind of out of circulation and for researchers for some time.
That's correct.
Yeah. Okay. Now, let's go back a little bit in time. Before this current phase, it was like mid-60s for LSD, 80s for MDMA before last time. Now, was there a cycle of research that had begun then that is now being completed now, would you say, or continued?
There has been limited. Before criminalization in the mid-1980s of MDMA, there are thousands and thousands of anecdotal reports of it being used by couples, therapists, and counselors and in a variety of circumstances.
Yeah.
And there have been a lot of safety data that has come out since then that the U.S. government has run. But in terms of actually applying it to see where it can be very beneficial, that is only happening now.
Yeah. Good. Well, thank you. Ryan, are you still there?
Yes, sir.
Yes. I'm kind of curious, what would you say the trauma is, or what causes it in the war? Is it like feeling responsible for the loss of your buddy? or something like that, and not being able to forgive yourself? What kind of pain are we talking about here?
Well, I think so the people that are going to be using these medicines are considered treatment resistant. And what that means is they've tried therapies and pharmacotherapy at the VA for at least 6 months. That's part of the criteria of these clinical trials. And so what I think is going on is that the veterans that are showing resistance to treatment are having deeper childhood issues of trauma.
Childhood stuff, huh? Yeah.
Right.
And as well.
That's a general answer for you. Because of the syndromic effect of PTSD and how complex it is, that's one of the reasons why the VA is struggling to treat all of the symptoms that come along with PTSD, which include depression, anxiety, sleep, nightmares, night tremors, flashbacks. So there's tons of stuff that goes into the treatment. And part of the problem that we are seeking out alternative treatments is because of the fact that most of these drugs are like a Band-Aid, whereas psychedelics in general are something that helps you take out your rug that you've been sweeping all the dirt under the rug. It allows you to take that rug outside and beat it with a stick.
Yeah.
And that's how I prefer to clean my house. And I'm sure that there's other veterans out there that are sort of tired of the medications that are being prescribed.
That's great. You just have to be willing to deal with your stuff, I guess.
Absolutely.
But once you are, then, hey, let's do it.
Ryan, you might tell him your experience, because Ryan himself was diagnosed with PTSD.
Yeah, you know, I'd like that, folks. We're going to go to a break right now. So, Ryan, let's hear about your experience as soon as we get back from our sponsor ads, okay?
This is the Dr. Future Show. Thanks for being here. We'll see you in a minute.
Yeah, we'll be right back.
Thanks.
Welcome back to the Dr. Future Show. We're talking to people involved with a documentary about veterans with PTSD and their healing journeys with ayahuasca, MDMA, and cannabis. And we're about to talk to Ryan, who was a vet, about one of his experiences regarding post-traumatic stress.
Yeah, I'd love to share my story. So I was honorably discharged from the United States Marine Corps in 2011 after serving 4 years with the infantry. I was an 0311 infantry rifleman, and I think the real experience happened. My first interaction with PTSD happened in infantry training school. That's where it sort of all began. We were out at a field ops training mission, and one of my instructors, I won't give his name out, we were doing a land nav operation, and one of our Marines compromised the mission. You know, we were all out there. We were real tired. It was 4 days out in the field, sleep deprivation, food deprivation.
What kind of operation was this? Was the name of this type of operation?
This was infantry training school. This was in Camp Geiger. It was more to get what we call modern urban warfare. So this was a new type of warfare that we were being trained in, whereas conventional warfare is geared more toward like line training, sort of like World War II, sort of advancing, falling back. This is more clearing houses, street sweeping, house to house. So part of our training exercise was that one of the Marines compromised the mission that we were training for. The instructor called a school circle, and I could see the tears start to flow and the anger and the rage. And I could just tell that he was re-experiencing something that he had experienced in Baghdad. He was one of the initial pushers.
Wow.
But he was in Iraq during the surge in 03.
Mm-hmm.
You know, at the time, like my psyche was looking at that and saying, wow, he's got a real passion for this work. And then a couple years later, I started to see a common theme amongst Marines that they were experiencing this same sort of trigger. And of course, the sergeant was looking out for our well-being. He didn't want us to get killed, and he explained all that. But that was sort of the first interaction I had with it. And then shortly after that, I was stateside in Washington, D.C., and I had a friend come back from Iraq. His name was Sergeant Leon Alcivar. He was an infantry guy, too. He was in my unit at that time, and he didn't show up for muster, which is something that we do every morning to get a head count. So we went up to his room, and I opened the door with the barracks manager, and there he was. He'd hanged himself in his barracks room.
Wow, and you saw that firsthand, huh? Wow.
Yeah. He was a good friend of mine. I was one door down from him. We used to watch fights together, and you know, one of the things that he did a lot was drink. That's what a lot of Marines did in the barracks, is drink and self-medicate. And so I didn't really... It didn't occur in my head at that time that that was PTSD. I thought maybe, you know, it was something else unrelated. And then shortly after that, you know, NCIS came in and did an investigation and found no alcohol in his blood, which I thought was weird. I couldn't imagine doing something like that stone cold sober.
Yeah.
You know, that was just something that was foreign to me. And the fact that Sergeant Leon had just picked up Sergeant about 2 weeks before, which is something that we all, that's an important deal for Marines when you pick up Sergeant. Mm-hmm. So all these factors came in that said, this guy's got a lot going on for him. He's about to get out of the Marine Corps. He made it through. He didn't die. And he took his own life. Mm-hmm. And it just, that, from that incident onward, you know, I started looking into PTSD and my interest in psychology and counseling really picked up from there.
Did you?
And I just started asking questions. And then, yeah. So after that incident, I got out, I finished up my contract and I went to the VA, for treatment. And shortly after that, you know, I started noticing that there was this prescribing of medications that I was given for my symptoms. And it turned out to be the same thing for almost every other veteran in that lobby that I started interviewing with. Now, hey, what are you being prescribed? What are you, yeah. How long are you spending with the psychiatrist? What are you being prescribed? What dosages? And it was just this underlying pattern. And I finally said, all right, there's got to be something else out there. And
really?
Yeah, I mean, it sounds like you were at a Coke machine or something, you know, like put your quarter in, get your drink and say goodbye, right?
That's perfect. I love that. they should have put them in Coke machines because that's how they were being prescribed.
It's pretty automatic. Wow. So that's when you discovered that there were alternatives. Did you get involved with a program with an alternative? And what was it?
Not directly. So after I started collecting all this stuff, I was in community college at the time. I was going for my 2-year degree. And I met a friend there, and I did some underground psychedelic therapy with him. From that experience, that was the first time I had ever heard of a psychedelic, done a psychedelic. And before that, the most I had smoked was pot, and I was in high school recreationally. So I had no idea what a psychedelic was. I believed in the stigma.
Yeah.
And, you know, that sort of just led me on the path of Googling the hell out of what DMT is and what these drugs do in your brain and following the research. And then I found MAPS.
Reasonable.
Yeah. And then shortly after that, I completed my undergrad in psychology, and I moved my family and my 2 kids and my wife out here to Colorado to follow this study with MAPS. And right now I'm doing an observational study with MAPS to look at ayahuasca for PTSD, mm-hmm. which will have institutional review and approval to look at the effects of ayahuasca for PTSD.
Mm. Would you say that the ayahuasca helped you access childhood memories? Did it help you with looking at yourself and self-reflection, understanding who you were, questions like that?
Absolutely. Ayahuasca, one of the things I try to explain is that it mimics the same mechanisms of exposure therapy. Mm. And exposure therapy is a therapy that's being used by the VA right now to treat post-traumatic stress disorder. It's basically a re-traumatization or a recalling of the original event that sort of kicked off the trauma.
Total recall.
Yeah, it's a total revisitation of the trauma.
Yeah, I've heard of things called regression therapy, where you kind of...
Absolutely.
It's like a guided visualization where you re-experience something in a safer way.
Yeah.
You got it. Yeah, I always say it's like revisiting the shark after it's been put in a tank. So you're looking at the shark from the other side of the glass.
Mm-hmm. Right, and it's kind of in a hypnosis setting or a deeper... It's not like your normal everyday consciousness where you're just talking about it. It's a little dreamier. Right?
Exactly. And what I was surprised to find was that those therapies target parts of the brain that avoid hyperarousal of the amygdala, which is our fear response.
Yeah.
And ayahuasca directly targets the limbic system,
yeah,
which is interesting when it comes to PTSD treatment.
And fear, right. I heard someone else speak up in the background there.
Yeah, Janine, did you want to say something?
Well, I was just going to say, in contrast to simple regression therapy, these, particularly ayahuasca, goes much deeper into the system. It's much more real, and it affects the brain in different ways. So it's much more powerful, mm-hmm. I would say, than regression therapy. But it's along that continuum.
So
I just wanted to add that.
Yeah, and I heard you, Ryan, saying that it affects the amygdala, and I guess the amygdala is associated with the fight or flight behavior or fear and anxiety response. Is that right?
Absolutely. Yeah, and it also works with the hippocampus, which is responsible for memory, for new memory formations in the brain. Hmm. And what's interesting is that ayahuasca targets these areas. And it creates, now this is all theoretical, but there's a system called explicit and implicit memory formations. And this has to do with recreating old memories and storing them into, or making meaning out of the memory and putting them into a new spot in the brain called the prefrontal cortex. And that's where I think therapies target the PTSD to make meaning of the old memory by putting it and letting it evolve into the new part of the brain where you can actually make meaning of the memory versus just replaying the trauma out in your head in this loop that keeps going around between the amygdala and the hippocampus.
Mm. Yeah, stopping that loop.
So it gives you a chance to sort of reflect on it and train yourself to have a new response.
You got it. It's a bio reset.
Bio reset.
Well, it works with our computers. Maybe it works with our biocomputer.
There you go.
I was going to say Saj has quite a bit to add on this.
Okay, we would love to talk to Saj after the CBS News. Yeah, I look forward to hearing a little of the scientific understanding of what we're speaking of here. We're listening to the Dr. Future Show. We're talking about a documentary about veterans with PTSD and the healing with ayahuasca, MDMA, and cannabis.
Yeah, and when we come back, we'll give you a chance to find out a little bit more about the crowdfunding campaign being used to support this work. So stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Welcome back to the Dr. Future Show. We're next going to be speaking with Saj Razvi, who is the founder of the Love and Trauma Center in Denver and educates clinicians nationally in the skills of trauma resolution and is involved, I believe, in some of the clinical trials of MDMA, Doc?
That's correct. It is appropriate that we're having this conversation on the Dr. Future Show because we think that this is the future of where psychotherapy is heading.
Mm. What do you see that is in the future with this process?
Well, the results, basically, in contrast to what we're seeing today. So basically, what Ryan was referring to is that pretty much all treatments for trauma have some element of re-exposure as part of it. We know that that has to happen. And what the research is also telling us is that basically current techniques, current psychotherapy techniques, are effective anywhere from 18 to 25% of the time.
Oh, it's pretty bad. I was going to ask, why is it so hard to heal war trauma, and why is this better?
Well, the data is coming back, and by the way, that 18 to 25% of the people that traditional techniques work for, we suspect those are people that are more single event trauma, which is to say that, you know, as opposed to repeated things that have happened to people over time, this is something like a car accident that happens once.
What would be a typical example of a war trauma, like someone who felt responsible for losing his buddy in an explosion? Or
that might be a single event trauma, but I think also what we're getting at here is that when we're talking about complex PTSD, right, which is to say that usually, so the soldiers that the VA sees that have chronic PTSD symptoms, they're people that probably had some chaotic, traumatic childhood experiences that served as their foundation, and then they grew up and went to war. Versus somebody who had secure, stable, solid childhood, and then that person goes to war, they will definitely be shaken up. They may have some symptoms and things like that, but usually those folks find their feet. Right? Many people experience trauma, but only 8% or so get the PTSD diagnosis.
Gotcha.
And so the reason why I'm suggesting that this is the future of psychotherapy is that we are seeing that after three active drug treatments, 83% of the participants no longer qualify for the PTSD diagnosis.
Wow. From 23 to 83%. Wow, that's amazing.
Exactly. Exactly.
Would you say that MDMA is an effective way to access childhood memories?
It's very effective for that. People have very vivid visual, emotional, and sensory experiences of things that happened to them, which on the one hand you might think are re-traumatizing or problematic in some way to take somebody back to, you know, very difficult circumstances in their life. But what we find is that people go back to those places with an enormous amount of support, an enormous sense of being connected and trusting of their own experience, and a sort of a new sense of relationship with themselves, other people around them, and the world that they inhabit.
Ah. Hi, Mrs. Future, you have a question?
Yeah, I really appreciate the work that you guys are doing and the potential that this therapy has for people. And I'm just wondering, how do you measure its effectiveness in the long run? And I guess especially, you know, once people kind of unravel what their trauma is, and then that gives them some measure of optimism to restart their lives, how do they move forward able to hold that steadiness without, say, being addicted to the drugs?
Great question. What we find is, so we've given over 1,000 clinical doses of MDMA, and that's what I'm referring to here, not Ryan's ayahuasca observational study. And we've not found any addiction issues crop up. And that's because MDMA is not something, at least used in the proper psychotherapeutic context for dealing with trauma. MDMA is can be a very difficult experience for people. Mm. People don't numb out and all of a sudden feel better. Their trauma is healed, right? It's a very engaged, deep process that people are going into with this, and one that people don't take lightly.
Mm. Does this transformational therapy work with a specific demographic type patients, or does it work with everyone?
Well, we're testing against different populations, but right now, when I say that, I mean veterans, first responders, and then the Boulder study is people with much more early childhood trauma, which can be chronic and very difficult to treat. I should say also that, again, these are very highly traumatized people that we're working with. These are people that will have typically tried psychotherapy for 15 or 20 years and have received some benefit, but, you know, the symptoms remain.
So it just doesn't go deep enough.
Oh. Exactly, exactly. So the medication allows people to go very deep with their process, and I should also add that we've been following people for long term, which the furthest out that we follow people is 3.8 years, and they maintain the results without continued medication use.
I would imagine a lot of the soldiers would probably quit the service. Would soldiers want to go back into service after experiencing such tranquility and inner peace?
That's one for you, yeah. Ryan.
Brian?
Yeah, I think, you know, I thought about that question. It's come up many times through my nonprofit called Veterans for Entheogenic Therapy, or VET. It's a nonprofit where we get together as veterans who support this type of therapy. That question has definitely cropped up. And my answer to that is we can't always screen out certain tendencies of veterans who join for very, very sinister and dark reasons.
Hmm. Yeah.
And that's a very general way to put it, but I always refer to Blackwater and operatives that are willing to go back out and continue doing the war effort. A lot of the vets that are seeking these treatments, I wouldn't suspect that they would be after a mindful experience like MDMA or ayahuasca, where your spirit and your psychology and your makeup are opened up in a very deep way, that you would be willing to go back out and continue doing the same thing that kind of put you there to begin with. A lot of these people you know, that just, to me, that doesn't make sense. The people that would be willing to go back out would probably most likely be using the VA's medications, more allopathic, you know, take this so that you put away the anxiety for a little bit so we can go back out and do our job.
Mm-hmm. I think that's an amazing insight to realize that the trauma is sort of the symptom on top of a real spiritual crisis, and the treatment is connecting the soldiers to, I guess, their morality or their conscience or their true purpose in life. And the people who get that reconnection are the ones who realize, oh, right, being a human being, I don't want to be choosing to go out there and hurt others and kill others and not have a personal relationship with the person that I'm harming. You know, I think
Absolutely.
That's amazing.
Yeah, you said it best, but my personal story, I can't speak for all veterans, but my story of joining the military for purely a service reason has now come full circle in letting go of the confusion of what my service was for, and now I'm able to serve veterans and continue serving others in this very empowering way that I think is putting a lot of the healing, whereas I was a part of the suffering, and now I'm a part of the healing.
Mm, nice.
And so that's been a divine experience to be able to interact with these medicines. which has helped me move toward a more productive way.
We have a question in from the audience. What is the set and setting in utilizing these entheogens for processing war trauma? What's the environment? Is it a psychiatrist's office or what?
Great question.
For MDMA or ayahuasca?
Both. Maybe just a 30-second description for each.
Go ahead, Josh.
Okay. Well, the MDMA setting is a psychotherapist's office that we convert to look like, you know, somebody's living room. It is two therapists that are working with the client just because the sessions are all day long. Basically, our participant arrives at near 10 in the morning. They receive the medication from a psychiatrist, which, by the way, to be clear, when this becomes a legalized pharmaceutical medication, it's not one that people will be prescribed so that they take their MDMA home, right? There will be...
It'll be a whole experience that's prescribed.
It's part of a clinical treatment. It's part of a clinical treatment.
Exactly. We're not testing MDMA. We're testing MDMA-assisted psychotherapy.
Right.
The set and setting is absolutely important. You know, thousands of people take MDMA every weekend to go clubbing, and they receive no therapeutic benefit from it.
Yeah, I hear you. Set and setting's everything in terms of the experience.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. And did you also want to address it for the ayahuasca therapies?
Sure. I know Dr. Future said about 30 seconds. I don't want to make it too long. But yeah, so my study is called Ayahuasca-Assisted Therapy for Treatment-Resistant Chronic PTSD. So I have sort of the same approach with SAJ. You can take these medicines and you can relive a lot of these experiences. But if the work is not being followed up afterwards, then you might as well go back into your regress state. It's important to integrate these experiences. And so part of our year follow-up is doing various psychotherapies, all sorts of different psychotherapies, to find out what works best for the veteran. Equestrian therapy they'll be doing throughout the year after their ayahuasca experience. And during the experience itself, they'll be in a shamanic setting, which we'll be working with a shaman.
See, that's another interesting thing I'd like to talk to you guys, probably after the next break. This is fascinating intersection of science and shamanism. And how exactly does that work?
All right, folks, stay tuned. We're going to go for another short break here on the Dr. Future Show. And then I think when we come back, if anybody has questions...
This is the time to ask them.
831-479-1080. So we'll be right back. Thanks.
Hey, welcome back to the Dr. Future Show. We're talking about this new documentary, From Shock to Awe, Healing PTSD with Ayahuasca, MDMA, and Cannabis. We have a number of people online who are involved with the film and with the therapeutic process itself. And we also have two callers.
Yeah, let's start with Sam from Santa Cruz. Hi, Sam. Do you have a question for our guests?
Yes, I wanted to know about peyote or mezcal, like the mescalero patches used up in New Mexico and the peyote that they use in Arizona at the peyote church. Would that do anything in doing it outside instead of inside of an office? That's all I wanted to say.
Okay, thank
you. Thanks, Sam. What do you guys say?
Any advice?
Absolutely. I just attended a peyote ceremony this weekend, actually. One of the powerful things about peyote is of the mescaline component, but more so the sacred space around using the sacrament of peyote. And that's, I think, what Saj was getting at with set and setting. In the religious community, the Native Americans have been using peyote for so long, and so have the shamans in Peru with ayahuasca. And part of that ceremony is the set and setting. It's just not as clinical. It's more of a shamanic approach. But nonetheless, it's important to keep the container around using these medicines, just as MDMA is used in an office setting. So should ayahuasca and peyote be used in a sacred space with someone who's experienced and knows that medicine.
Yeah, it helps get you to the right place.
All right. So
absolutely.
Thank you. So now we're going to say hello to our dear friend, John Monahan. Hi, John. Welcome to the show. How are you doing?
Hi. I've used a lot of these drugs. DMT is the ayahuasca. And I smoked that actually with Stanley Owsley, first time I ever had it.
Can you turn on your radio in the background, John?
Yeah, turn it off, yeah.
So okay. Did you have a question, folks, for this, or did you want to tell
me? You're also a vet, too. You were a vet
that vet.
Discovered psychedelics in the 60s.
Yeah, that's correct.
Oh, great.
He didn't go back to the war, either.
By the military, I might say.
What, say that again?
It was frowned upon by the whole military.
At the time,
people got busted on it.
So what do you make of these therapies, yeah. John? You think they're going to be helpful to the vets?
Yeah, I do, because it takes you back into the states of mind that you've been in before and can somehow realize, you know, release from it.
All right.
And a release from the pain and the psychological trauma.
Okay.
Yeah. That's one thing I would add, is that these actually seem to resolve trauma, not just patch it up. It really seems to heal it, not just to put a Band-Aid on it.
Hmm.
Well, I mean, make it illegal or...
No, heal it. Actually heal it. In other words, it's... Yeah, it doesn't recur again. You stop having trauma.
Yeah, that's correct. That's correct.
You break the pattern.
You know, I've been involved with such things, and it's a good thing, yeah.
All right. Thanks, John.
Thanks for your testimony, Warrior.
Yeah, they used to have parties with DMT, and it's not my idea of a party, but the hallucinatory factor was very interesting.
You know, that's something that I was wondering about, too, is like, how does the therapy deal with the difference between hallucination and reality? What is the handling of that?
That's where I think the shamanic approach comes in, because when you have a shaman that has been working with these medicines for thousands of years, that lineage is strong, and that's part of the psycho-spiritual piece with ayahuasca, which is less so with MDMA, but it is nonetheless something that adds to the recovery process of PTSD.
Right. I think an important distinction between something like ayahuasca and MDMA is that ayahuasca is a very powerful spiritual experience that mm-hmm. people have. And one of the reasons why the highest priority that MAPS has for working with MDMA as a legalized medication for trauma is that it's more reliable in the sense of it is a very somatic experience and less of a spiritual experience.
Mm.
And so it addresses the trauma at the level of sensation and emotion and memory.
Hmm.
And it really, really is not an hallucinogen.
No,
yeah,
MDMA is
it's a pathogen more so, right?
Yes.
It's and very good for memory recall and processing past traumas and events in your life.
Right. And seeing them with compassion.
Singing with compassion. That sounds more like an ayahuasca singing. But yeah, it's interesting how all these things are starting to come back in our culture right now. Now, how do you attest for this, folks? Is it just time that we have a reawakening of these substances?
Yeah, it's something like that. To realize it's not as terrible as you thought it was.
Well, I do think culturally we're ready for it. The stigmas, there's enough people in positions of power who have probably tried these things, and they're able to see that there could be some good. That's one of the reasons we want to make the movie, is to show actual stories and take the stigma away.
Mm-hmm.
And certainly we're at a place on our planet where we need as much healing as we can get.
Yeah.
So I think the time has come, and the time is now, and there's responsible use and responsible research going on with these substances so that people can distinguish between partying with these things and using them for sacred and psychological and spiritual healing.
Yes.
Absolutely.
I'm curious how, as a scientist, one can embrace both science and shamanism simultaneously. Like, for example, shamans would imagine that if you ask them if the earth is alive, they would agree it was alive. But if you ask a scientist if the earth is alive, it's a different question. It says, you mean biological life, or what do you mean by life? You know, all these things come up. So both of these paradigms need to simultaneously coexist to make sense to someone. I'm kind of curious how you do that.
I think that's what MAPS is doing exactly, is doing the legwork, the science, the hard work to quantify, verify, replicate something that is so vastly intuitive and personal. But it is this combination of that shamanic, deeply experiential thing, but trying to put some numbers and some structure around it so that it makes sense to the more logical, analytical
Gotcha. And Saj, how about you?
I would agree with Janine's attestment to that. Basically, you have these experiences that don't quite make sense to the rational prefrontal cortex of our mind, and yet the data is there. Again, this is not opinion. We are doing very gold standard hardcore science here when we're measuring people's the psychometrics that we give to people.
Yes, you have some pragmatic information. Now yeah. for the final moments here, looking at the little future, have you folks looked at virtual reality as a way in which to incorporate that into the therapeutic process yet?
We have not thought about that.
Okay, no. All right, just curious. that's going to be getting really fast, and there's some interesting possibilities there. Oh, okay, and also, before we go, can you tell us about the documentary and what's going on with that? I know there's an Indiegogo campaign. Can you share some information with us on that?
Yes, and if somebody is interested to either support our campaign or learn more about the movie and the subject,
yes,
go to our website, which is fromshocktoawe.com.
Yes.
Everything is there, including a way to contribute to the campaign. Our mission with this is to do exactly what your radio show has done, which is shed light on it, show stories, show humans, let the stories tell themselves, to see veterans before the therapy, during the therapy, and after the therapy.
I would think combat veterans would be able to help one another, too.
Yes, of course.
Yes, people have been through the experience, not just heard about it, but actually experienced it.
Exactly, and let the veterans speak for themselves and communicate.
Yes.
And that's what we want to do, is get that on record, and you can see it, you can feel it, you can taste it, mm-hmm. and let everybody decide for themselves.
It looks like I raised $150,000 for this project. It'll be a documentary on this topic.
Yes, and actually there are increments for that. We'll be following some ayahuasca ceremonies with Ryan's group and contributing to his study, his observational study, by actually recording it in film.
Yeah.
We're looking for phase 3 MDMA study so we can document those. So, yeah, it's also hard work, but it's so worth it.
Yeah.
We really think the word needs to get out.
Yeah, well, thank you. Thank you so much, Janine. Janine Sagert, Ryan LeCompte, and Saj Razvi on the line talking about this new documentary, From Shock to Awe.
And our dear friend John Monahan, vet and experienced
guy. Thank you, John.
Thanks, everybody. It's been a really enlightening show.
Appreciate it. Good luck with the Indiegogo campaign, folks. We look forward to following up with you later.
It's all about
thank you for having us.
Semper Fi. Semper Fi.
You've been listening to the Dr. Future Show on KSEO Santa Cruz, Salinas, San Jose, Monterey, and wherever you are, Watsonville, Palo Alto.